Hello and welcome to Sci-Fi.
Sci-Fi.
Yes, Sci-Fi, a podcast in which we review science fiction and fantasy novels, then come back and discuss them. So today we are discussing A Closed and Common Orbit by Becky Chambers, which is a sequel to her previous book, A Long Journey to a Small Angry Planet, I believe.
Close enough.
Something like that. So from the back of the book, Lovelace was once merely a ship's artificial intelligence. When she wakes up in a new body, following a total system shutdown and reboot, she has no memory of what came before. As Lovelace learns to negotiate the universe and discover who she is, she makes friends with Pepper, an excitable engineer who's determined to help her learn and grow. Together, Pepper and Lovey will discover that no matter how vast space is, two people can fill it together. Anyway, yes, that was a very accurate and strangely inaccurate description of the book.
Especially designed to be technically accurate, which is the best kind.
The best kind of correct. So what did everybody think? Barry?
I really liked it. Mm-hmm. And even though it was a slightly different approach to the world from the previous book, I still really enjoyed it.
Okay. Kevin?
Indeed. I liked it quite a bit. I think I liked it actually better than the first book.
Yeah. I really love this book. It's a kind of one of my favorites that we've reviewed recently, and we've actually reviewed some pretty good books recently. I think that it gains extra points for having an interesting and good description of an AI and, you know, sort of sticking to something that, say, a lay reader might be able to understand, while also sort of alluding to some more technical stuff that might be going on. Overall, I thought that it's got the kind of warmth that I associated with the previous book, but also had a little bit more pathos in it because of a long flashback sequence that involved some serious struggle going on. So, yeah, overall, I rate this pretty highly.
Yeah, it was a feel good book. I mean, compared to some of the other books we've been reading, where it's dystopian, future, and everybody's like, oh my god.
Right. And yet this is not a book where everything is sweetness and light. There's some nasty stuff going on, but it's a story about surviving that and making friends and a lot of stuff about a parent-child relationships.
And of course AI rights.
And AI rights, which I'm all for. In fact, future robot overlords, remember, I was always on your side.
I've got one of those, delivery robots trapped in the back room over there.
I can lead you to bury future robot overlords.
When they go back in time to wipe us all out.
And let us not forget that this is also Hugo nominated at the moment.
Yes, at this point in time. In fact, at this point in time, it will always be
Yes, it will always be Hugo nominated. It remains to be seen whether it will receive the award or not.
Yes. So we're going to take a brief break and come back for our spoiler section, where we'll be downloaded all into robot bodies or something like that.
Kits.
That sounds like a good idea.
I hope I get a good kit.
I'm sick of just being an AI.
Right. We shall return for We Are Sci-Fi.
Sci-Fi.
All right, and welcome to our discussion section. So we shall start off with some of our usual questions. Do we have any favorite scenes?
Probably.
Now, I know you guys have favorite scenes. They're written on a piece of paper in front of me.
Well, I wrote mine down.
Not mine. But actually, I think one of my favorite scenes was when Jane 23, finds the ship and kind of starts living there, and she kind of decides to repair it. And you kind of guess that would probably happen, but, has a bit of echoes of post-nuke stuff in there. junkyard repair.
See why you would have liked that.
I'm like, I could see this as like a setting, like they're living in this giant like junkyard repair.
You see it as a vacation resort.
I can only see, Kevin's joy at coming upon like some sort of pinball machine graveyard, with nothing but tools and an AI to instruct him on how to repair everything.
It's like, look, I'm going to build an AI out of used pinball machine parts.
Ringtone. Okay.
Conan says, chop.
So to give a little bit of context, one of our characters, who is later known as Pepper, was originally Jane. She was...
Jane 23.
She was originally part of a group of genetically engineered kids that were used as forced labor, minded by these AIs they called the mothers on this sort of horrifying factory planet.
Were they really AIs, the moms, or...
I think they were some kind of robots.
They weren't sentient, necessarily. I don't know if they were sentient. But
yeah, the impression that they were not sentient, or they were very, very controlled heavily, if they were.
But yeah, they were AIs. It's actually stated.
I thought they were just sort of like graduated older kids or something.
But no, they specifically.
I maybe wasn't paying as close enough attention to that relationship.
Yeah, well, they implied that they were made of metal, had no eyes, and were in fact machines that were running code.
Fembots.
But aside from that, there was, you know, a certain amount of, you know, ambiguity.
Well, they did say silver.
I've got an ambiguous statement right here below me.
Anyway.
Not you, Kevin. Steven.
It was ambiguous, you said.
I was looking right at him.
Yeah, I know. But they had no eyes or something. Anyway, I also was a little unclear, but I think by the end I was pretty certain. And then there was this whole thing where somehow Barry and I didn't quite grasp the thing that the author mentioned the first 5 minutes of the book, where she said, what was your name, Pepper? Oh, it was Jane.
And then we cut immediately to
Jane 23, blah, blah, blah. And when I re-listened to it, like on the drive over in the first 5 minutes, they mentioned it. And I was so proud of myself for, like, you know, guessing, like, you know, halfway through the book that, you know, they were the same person. And then I'm like, oh, I'm a failure.
Well, that's good to know.
As we pointed out earlier, Kevin, Becky is out to get you.
Well, I was thinking, I wonder, was the reader intended to realize this, you know, the entire book, that these were the same characters?
I'm going to go out on a limb and say yes.
Yeah, probably yes. But then I was like, she'd only mention it once, you know, where authors have cleverly mentioned things once and then you don't notice till later on.
Wait a minute, guys. In the first book, were they on a spaceship the whole time?
No, it was a simulator. They didn't actually go to the moon either.
I don't know, but those cats, how big were they?
Dear God.
Mark.
You're crushing my fur.
This happens to me sometimes where I'm waiting for the twist. So I thought that the big twist was going to be that it wasn't Jane 23 this whole time. It was actually Jane 64, who had been grabbed, but we never saw her die. And so I thought, well, you know, she just said that she was raised by AI. So maybe this is actually all Jane 64. And then, of course, that makes less and less sense as we go on. And I'm just like, but maybe, I see you. I see your twist coming up. I'm wise to you.
I was kind of disappointed in the fact that the Janes weren't numbered in base two, you know, or powers of two.
Oh, yeah. I'm like, you know,
two, four,
Jane
eight.
23. I'm like, is that double? And I'm like, no, 64
I'm like,
is not.
64. I'm like,
but never let engineers read science fiction.
But 23... times two, that's 46, and then you swap them, that's 64. See, I got it. It's a clever twist there.
Well, you guys are making me feel better.
About what?
About the twist that I was expecting.
Although I think that you should write that fanfic, Steven, like Jane 64 fanfic.
Yeah, how she takes over after Jane 23 leaves, turns around and like bops the mother really hard. And
it turns out that Jane 64 was actually one of the mothers all the whole time.
Right, exactly. That's why they're always in pairs.
Yes. Yeah, I was thinking, wow, I figured it out when Jane 23 was sort of like a teenager and like, yeah, I think so, but I'm not 100% sure. And then like when she goes and finds the fuel depot and they mention something and a guy opens it, I'm like, I'll see. And that's the guy later on. Yeah. And then when she goes in like a couple minutes later and he did artwork, I'm like, I'll see. Totally confirmed. And like, like now I'm like, oh, they did mention the first 5 minutes of the book. God, I feel stupid now.
Yeah, but I seem to remember like in the first book, I was convinced that there was some big twist coming up that didn't happen. I think that something about how Becky Chambers writes makes me think that there's going to be some sort of bizarre twist at the end.
Well, it's because every book and all media now has to have a twist in it, or seems to be. And Becky Chambers just writes fun adventure books. So, you know, it's like, no,
really good fun adventure books. Let's, you know.
No, yeah, it's not a bad thing. I'm like,
exactly.
You know, it's it's not like a challenging, oh God, like what the hell's going on? And, or, you know, I really want to die halfway through this book because it's just terrifying. Like Handmaid's Tale, right? It's right. Like, it's like, no, sometimes when you read stuff, it's just fun and enjoyable.
I don't understand.
You know, it's not like
food tastes good.
It's not like PKD where you're like, I don't understand what's going on, and I kind of enjoy it, but I kind of want to just, you know, get a grot out and like, oh, what's going on? And like,
well, yeah, with Philip K. Dick, for me, it's just like listening to a wacky friend tell bizarre stories.
He's like, and then,
I mean, I have experience with that.
Yeah, I don't know what you're talking about, Steven.
This book isn't causing me pain. I know I'm not going to enjoy it.
Right. I'm way too cool for that. So, right. And then you're like, wait, I'm just enjoying the book. How weird. Although she does bring up, you know, like the AI rights and other things, which may or may not be allegory or just, you know, hey, this will be interesting to discuss for the future.
Jane is basically a sweatshop kid and is living on one half of the planet, and the other half, they all live in real luxury and they just ship all their crap over to the other half of the planet.
Yeah, it's just like Wally, right?
Or like here.
Right. And it kind of turns into some stuff where you're like, that's kind of disturbing, where it's like, and then don't worry, they don't actually have rights. They're not even people because they're maybe clones. We're not sure. And
I actually did enjoy that part of the book where, I mean, it wasn't, you know, explored heavily, but sort of like the implication that people were sort of grown or clone or, you know, vat people or something, where, you know, large corporations use them as essentially slave labor. I could totally see that as part of our future.
Exactly.
Hey, so how do I profit by this?
It gets the most profit for the corporations. That's the important part.
Yeah. Just feed them their one, you know, nutritious soy drink in the morning. And
yeah, what, they just called it a meal.
Yeah.
And she was confused later. What do you mean? You just drink your meals. And she's like, well, Jane,
you're going to have to learn to cook dog.
Yeah. Yes. That was kind of an amusing little side thing. Right. After a while, there aren't that many dogs around anymore for some reason.
Can you guys get busy and make more dogs?
Ringtone. So yes, Jane escapes from the factory and stumbles into a ship that's sitting on the scrapyard, which still has a functional AI. And the AI basically raises her. That was actually the other brief thing that I was having was, is there going to be a terrifying twist? Because Pepper, who is Jane later on, says to Sidra, who is an AI, well, it's just one of those times when life balances out because now I can help you, and I was raised by an AI. And at first, it starts out with her being raised by these horrifying, monstrous AIs. And so I'm thinking, by help, does she mean torment?
Yeah, you know, Al is really going to turn her into some sort of person who raises other AIs to become serial killers. Well, little Hannibal's running around.
No, I was just back.
You meant the mothers?
I meant the mothers.
Oh, the mothers?
Yeah. Yes, when she was being raised by the mothers, I was thinking, oh, well, no, I don't think that Becky Chambers would do that, that this would be some sort of really terrifying, bizarre revenge fantasy.
This doesn't feel very good.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like the first book was just to kind of put you off guard. And
yes, of course. It's all a long,
the long con.
Books three and four will go really dark.
It's just like, yeah, we'll focus on three podcasters and how they're gradually tortured to death.
Well, it did make me think a little bit about sort of like other human-bodied AIs in other science fiction media, right? So you've got like the Bishops from the Alien franchise and maybe Data from Star Trek and things. And
yes. So in this story, we have Sidra, who on the back of the book was called Lovelace, which is kind of like calling me Model 3000 or something like that.
We're more like a Model 2K.
I was being nice. But Sidra was originally a ship's AI. She was ported over to be in a humanoid body, although not a bio kit like we thought it was. They didn't really explain the body kit very much in the first book.
It looks like a human body is what it is.
Right.
It's not, you're not like, so I'm still unclear whether it's legal in this universe to have regular robot-looking robots or not.
They have them, okay. So it's probably legal.
Well, considering they were on that one like slave planet, I didn't give a whole lot of credence to the legality of that. But
well, it seems like it's different in different areas of the of the galaxy.
Right.
But it's definitely illegal in this region or whatever to have an AI inhabit a human-looking body, I guess.
It's definitely illegal, yes.
Yes, yes. That's what I said, illegal.
Yes, for those who are listening to the future. please don't send us to jail for having an illegal AI inside of a legal body kit.
I don't think either of you are AIs. I'm not sure whether or not you're artificial.
I'd be smarter if I was an AI.
Are you saying I'm not sentient? I'm just sort of like an automata or something?
Are you saying you are?
You're sort of a lump.
I'm supposed to say I am.
Yeah, the whole sentience thing, that's probably a bigger project than what we can take on in 10 minutes. But yes.
We'll just write it up in some lattice, right?
Yeah. So anyway, Barry, did you give a favorite scene?
I did. I like the sort of the initial part of the book where Sidra gets downloaded into the kit. Mm-hmm. And she's sort of exploring and finding the differences between being in the ship versus being in the kit, you know. So like there's like even the scene where she's like, well, normally I have like a 360 degree view. It's sort of unlimited distance. And, you know, when she's into the kit, she's sort of, you know, got a pair of eyes and some ears and stuff right. like that.
And she's like, I don't like just these like two camera BS. Like,
yeah, it was very disconcerting for her to sort of navigate the world in that fashion until she kind of figures out, well, I want to record certain things, but I can't record everything because I only have finite storage and sort of the limitations of her body. And
yeah, it was amusing when they're like, hey, look, we got this chair in the corner of the room, so it's like you have a camera here. And like, right. they're like, she's like, oh, yeah, this is nice. It's relaxing.
It's sort of, I really like the explanation because it's sort of a reverse autism spectrum where she's not overwhelmed by too much input. Instead, normally when she focuses on a single thing, that means that there's an emergency going on. And so she can't get rid of the feeling that there's an emergency going on because now she only has to focus on one thing.
Right. Yeah. But yeah, so that's my sort of my favorite, not just one scene, but you know, sort of the first quarter of the book, I think, you know, just her exploration of the new kit and the way they refer to it is it's always the kit.
Yeah.
Like, mm-hmm. Right. She didn't say it was her body.
Right. Yeah. I like the little Easter egg with the, you know, tasting things.
Oh yeah,
exactly. That was a big part of my favorite scene, which was her going to a party and sampling all the alcohol and sort of, I like alcohol. It's just like it didn't have like any cognitive effect, but
it's like a fire going. That's a nice scene. Like,
right. You know. Because the maker of her body kit had realized that, oh, you know, you're going to want to share experiences with, you know, humans, well, organics. And so they had rigged it up so that she could actually enjoy things by playing back pleasurable memories or pleasurable sort of sense files and that sort mm-hmm. of thing whenever she took a sip of a different kind of drink.
Like, wasn't there a smell or something that caused her to go back to like the beach or something?
Right. If she drank a cup of mech, which, spoiler alert, was their version of tea in this book, then she would imagine stepping into a bath. And yeah. I thought that was a clever way of sort of getting around the idea of how do you give an AI semi-realistic responses to things that are very organically based.
Right, sort of the anti-data response, where mm-hmm. it's like, well, yes, the chemical composition of, you know, the coffee smell is this or whatever. Like, you know.
Right, exactly.
Or as opposed to, I am fully functional in...
yes, it's the less psychotic lore response.
I am not less perfect than Lore.
often wrong soon.
He's got a broken heart. Yeah. Can't even tell his two boys apart.
Jesus, the speed at which you came up with that is terrifying.
Almost as if you were an AI.
Almost, oh crap, they know.
Yes, okay. Brent Spiner is now going to come for you.
Push the button and send the charge. They've been lured into my trap. All right, let's see. So...
Did you have a favorite scene or?
Oh yes, the party. Well, that was so yeah, I really liked that, and I thought that her descriptions were kind of subtle but nicely melded together. There was sort of a logical explanation of everything that was going on, and it kind of made me want to go to more parties, which is not necessarily a default state for me.
You're like, wait, this is like sitting in front of a campfire.
Yeah, I need a lookup table for emotions.
I know.
Is it going to be a hash table?
This is like the geek conversion. So sort of like, you know, how do you enjoy yourself in social situations? Like, well, I have a book here. Let's see. Flip through. Like,
open up the file and read through.
Oh, this
bit.
Is like taking a bath. Okay, I can do this. Like,
excuse me, I've got to take my clothes off. No.
I'm going to have to go empty my food sack.
Just think about it.
The food sack.
As usual, I always like, you know, find some part to nitpick in my brain. I'm like, oh, come on. If they had that technology, they could do something with that food. Although they did that in If they did that in a Humans too, the TV show, where she was like, you know, had that sack where she took out the food.
Yeah, that goes back to R. Daniel Olivier, who's actually probably the closest analogy we have to this. He was the android robot cop that Isaac Asimov created for Caves of Steel.
I want to see a 70s TV show. That name sounds very Caves of Steel.
You're right. It sounds very Caves of Steel.
Well, yes. I can imagine it being, or maybe does 80s. It would have like, you know, a chrome looking thing that would like pan across.
Caves of Steel.
Okay. So yeah, it reminded me of R. Daniel Olivier, who was originally in Isaac Asimov's Caves of Steel, because he also had a food sack that he could empty out.
Food sack.
So food sack.
Sounds like our new band name. A food sack that you can empty.
Food sack, baby.
So I also thought that Port Coriel, the planet there.
Reference.
So I also think that Port Coriel was a good depiction of what sort of like what human, you know, diaspora is going to look like in the future as well.
Yeah,
you know,
actually,
it's a little Firefly-ish.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of, you know, out there and things are rough and tumble, but they've got little pockets of, you know, art and
right.
It seems like
it's
and
wacky.
Some big markets.
Yeah, it wasn't a utopia. In fact, they specifically said, "Oh, yeah, there's a bad part of town over there."
Yeah,
but it was kind of a thriving sort of downtown. You know, like the sort of artist communities that spring up in the middle of big cities sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Mos Eisley,
a den of villainy and scum. Isn't that what it was?
Hive of scum and villainy, but
so close.
Den of iniquity, my friend.
Give me your geek card.
Bite me.
Invitation accepted. Anyway, we wanted to talk about sort of the weaving together of the two halves of the narrative. We've got the childhood narrative of Pepper / Jane 23, who was being raised by Owl the AI, and Sidra sort of being in some ways kind of raised by Pepper in the future. Well, it's all in the future.
It could be a distant past.
She also learns quite a bit from Tack, the tattoo artist.
Sure.
You know, she kind of like separates herself a little bit from Pepper.
But I was sort of seeing that as kind of an accelerated adolescence.
Right.
Which actually Jane 23 was undergoing in the back part of the narrative as well. I thought that definitely Pepper and Sidra had a mother and daughter thing going on. And I liked how it was explicitly called out in the narrative at the beginning of the story because Becky Chambers.
You mean it was called out somehow?
Subtly slipped in there so people don't get it. It's way confusing.
She basically says, okay, well, this is just how things balance out. I was raised by an AI. I'm basically going to raise you. And so it's just like, this isn't an arbitrary thing that just happens to happen.
You mean it's some sort of common orbit?
It is a closed and common orbit. That was actually one thing that I wanted to talk about was in the first book, A Long Journey to a Small Angry Planet, that was literally the Cliff's Notes version of the plot.
I think it was an awesome title.
I love it. But this one, I was waiting for the closed and common orbit because she had now conditioned me to look for very literal things in the title.
How dare you deceive me, Becky?
Maybe she could point out they were on a planet.
Yeah, I assume that she was talking about Jane and Pepper as being the common orbit.
I guess
also they do find Owl again, so.
In a museum.
Yes, she belongs not in a museum.
Yeah, I did like Owl. Owl was a neat character, and it was kind of funny too how they were going through the, you know, Jane 16, and like, you know, Jane turns into like, you know, the teenager, like, you know, Owl, God, stop reminding me. She's like, well, I only mentioned it because you forgot yesterday. He's like, oh, yeah, but shut up, like,
I know what I'm doing.
I didn't forget it today.
She did nail the teen Jane, pretty well.
Yeah, my only nitpick actually about the whole style of the narrative is when she was a kid, they had the narrative around Jane use the word real instead of really, and it's obviously deliberate. She's sort of writing it in little kid speak.
Right.
But it's just like, okay, but it's third person. Do we have to keep on saying, and it was real this all the time? But
colloquial.
How dare I?
How dare you nitpick?
Yes.
That's Kevin's job.
That didn't bother me at all, Steven.
She said in the beginning she was going to do that.
You guys are embarrassing me.
But yeah, no, I loved the sort of adolescence, although it did kind of make my skin crawl. Not because it was bad, but it's just like, oh God, I can't stand this.
It's like, wow, I really was a little shit when I was growing up.
Yeah. Well, and also she was such a good little kid in the beginning. And
well, so she was so eager to please in the beginning, you know.
Right.
Exactly. I actually want to give a shout out to the narrator.
Oh, really good.
Yeah.
Yes, we like the narrator, Rachel DeLude.
I think she did a really great job, you know, having, you know, unique voices for each of the characters, you know, for their various time frames and
yeah,
and things. And it made it very enjoyable, I think, to listen to. I think she also did the first book as well.
She did, yes.
So,
and she actually gave Owl sort of this perky and very subtly artificial voice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was interesting, too, with... You know, later on, she goes into that artificial intelligence shop and they're talking about how, oh, and this one has this kind of personality and this one's good for this kind of ship and stuff. And how it's sort of like, you know, Owl very much reminding me of like young kid educational software kind of interface. It's like, hi, I'm Owl. This is how you use the ship. And like, yeah. You know,
oh, I'm sorry. Let me put a face on for you. I actually loved that part.
Yeah.
And then they actually had...
Was it the Tootsie Pop Owl?
Well, but they also then literally had what you're describing as a separate thing in the book where they had sort of this kids program called Big Bug.
Oh, right. And that was another thing where I thought I was like, you know, kind of being clever. Like, oh, wait, isn't that the same thing? Like, you know,
Jesus.
My God, these words are arranged in some kind of order.
They
I
mean
think they're
something.
Telling a plot. I think they're trying to tell me something.
Well, yeah. And then what was it? They only had like a certain number of hours of programming for kids movies and other things. And so, you know, Jane like grows up basically watching like the same TV
like the
shows
same
over
five
and over.
Show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I grew up watching channels 1 through 9. I feel
like, look,
the sympathy.
3-2-1 contact. That was awesome. Like,
it's the great space coaster.
And I did love that scene where, you know, she's grown up with, you know, the bug hunt thing and she's sort of like, you know, or whatever it was called.
This is a bug hunt, man.
Yeah, forget
it. Game over.
Starship Troopers.
I know
now.
You just said it, but I can't remember now.
Big Bug.
Big Bug, okay. I thought it was Big Bug Hunt, though. Anyway.
Not Big Bird, Big Bug.
So when she finally escapes from the planet and they confiscate the ship, which of course completely, you know, pisses her off, but she goes out into the wider world and they have a certain amount of credits that they've given her. And she's like, I had to go back and explain to Blue or whatever he was, I forget what his kid name was, how she had spent like 90% of their money on like the full catalog of this, like this game thing in a like crappy used VR set.
Oh, you're talking about the fuel depot kid.
Yes, exactly. Well, yeah, I mean, that turned out to be Blue.
Oh, did it?
Wow.
I have no idea.
He did do art in there. That's when I figured it out.
I mean, I've got to admit, she didn't explicitly say so-and-so who turned out to be Blue, but he did have a speech impediment.
You're an impediment. Look, I was busy going camping.
I'm glad that you visited nature.
Yes.
And just like Jane 23 did.
Yes. I just had to eat less dog. Do you guys like some cup of noodles are right over there?
Why, yes. What kind of meat is this, Barry?
Wow.
Chihuahua.
Woof.
Okay, yeah. So
I guess I was gonna say, yeah, I could kind of connect to the whole like love of childhood games.
Yeah, I'm
somehow. I can't think of any right now, like Wasteland.
Yeah. But, I've decided that when I die, I want my body to be cremated and put in unmarked boxes in your garage so that they will never be disturbed.
Yes.
I want to be turned into a pinball flipper.
We will turn you into a 5 1/4 inch floppy disk.
Marked stuff.
Look, I can save a total of like, you know, 1 megabyte worth of data on these like disks.
On Steven's corpse.
Yes.
Well, that got interesting.
When does it not?
But yes, Kevin, I'm sure that you can find some sympathy for Pepper. Yeah, so what did we think about the slave labor and human rights aspects of the book?
Disturbing. And as Barry said, like, gosh, that seems like that's kind of happening somewhere. Yeah,
it's complete, it seems like a completely, you know, plausible future.
Right. It's one of those, well, how could they fall into that kind of dystopia where one half of the world lives in splendor and the other half, you know, just has to sort junk all day? Oh, right. I'm going to
I've got a collection of
another cheap shirt.
Yes. I got to go, you know, sort my collection of sporks. They're my sporks. You can't have them. There are many sporks, but these are mine.
Well, like you said, it's not a utopia. There's a lot of nice things about a lot of stuff that happens in this future projection.
Right.
A speculative fiction, perhaps. But yeah, there's also things, and even in the previous book where they talk about, you know, clones don't have rights in certain areas. And
right.
So it's...
And AIs don't have rights. And I'm just...
And AIs don't have rights. So
one of those things where it's a social cause that does not yet exist that I'm already deeply invested
yeah,
in.
Yeah, you're like,
it's
what?
Like, damn it! Let them go free!
Yeah, and I do think about that where it's like, you know, working, you know, like, it's okay, like, let's see if I can make something that's sentient. And then you kind of think, well, once you hit that point where it's, you know, self-aware, you're like, can I turn it off anymore? You're like, well, as long as you'll turn it back on, maybe. Like,
well, it's not really sentient because I didn't put this letter S on its forehead.
God.
But in the first book, I kind of felt that the technology behind the AIs sort of left me sort of thinking, well, is this actually something I would describe as sentient, or is this more like Siri, and in which case, how is it falling in love with people? And in this case, they really gave a good description of the pathways and, you know, didn't really go into too much detail, but I thought gave kind of enough flavor of the kind of AI that this is essentially a neural network type of thing. It's a monitoring system, so it's obviously software, but it's using pathways, which sounds more like a neural network system description.
My neural pathways have become accustomed to your, you know, living patterns, and it's made it enjoyable for me.
Thank you, Commander. That's kind of creepy.
like we're, you know, in Lattice, which is the language that she's apparently written in, right, or it's with
future
somehow.
C++.
Yeah, well, I kind of got the idea with that name made it sound like networks, right, or something like that. So sure. It's sort of like, oh, it's how you, it's sort of like a super high level language where you can, like, you know, it's like bundling together like thousands of neural networks, you know, right, which is kind of like what they're doing with deep learning now and stuff like that. And
all right, so back to our usual questions. Was there tea? None that I can remember, but there was plenty of mech, which is slightly disappointing because there was so much actual discussion of the word tea in the previous book. But in this case, there was, I assume that mech is...
Like coffee, I think, but, you know, well, they don't really say.
I got the impression it was more like matcha or something, or...
Yeah. What is it, kava-kava?
Yeah, basically, it was like kava-kava or something like that.
Basically, the idea was that you drink it and it gives you... What, a post-Thanksgiving dinner buzz?
Yeah, something like that. And of course, Jane's like, oh, well, that's, you know, you might want to do if you're like, you know, piloting a fighter plane or something like that. But if you're just repairing tech, you know, why not? Like,
any job where you can't take naps every day whenever you want is not a good job. Naps are awesome.
Yeah, I did. I will say that I kind of liked her lifestyle in that respect, where it's like, I just go to my thing, I repair stuff, and like, I charge whatever. It's cool. You know, I'm living. It's okay.
Right. Exactly. No, I would like that.
It's like her hippie commune, you know, happy, fun lifestyle.
Yes. Well, yes, we should get into that next. Who would you be? Now, originally, I was going to say Pepper for similar reasons. I liked her lifestyle. But thinking about who I'm most similar to, well, frankly, you take away
one
my
of the mothers, or
yes, exactly.
You are disobedient, child. You are off task.
You may not sleep with your pair tonight. Go sleep outside.
So yes, when I looked at all the characters, I really thought I was most similar to Sidra, because if I'm in an area where I can't actually check things on my phone, I get very twitchy. And so when she was talking about the fact that she was cut off from the network and she kept on wanting to download everything and was having trouble sort of being an informational pack rat and just wanted to have constant Wi-Fi connection,
right,
all the time.
Plug it into my brain. They're like, people like that just like curl up in the corner and just like live in VR land. Like, you're like, what's wrong with that?
Right. You know, like when I heard that, oh, they've got implantable hearing aids that have Bluetooth connections, I'm just like, can I get that now? My hearing's fine. But just, can I get that now? Because then I could just always be listening to podcasts.
Yay.
Even when people think they're talking to me, I could just turn my regular ears off.
It just, one ear goes, wah, 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 wah.
Yeah.
This is like those special ear pods that they gave out to the people in Doctor Who from the Cybermen, right?
Oh, yes.
Right.
Control you.
Yes. So anyway, I have tremendous sympathy with Sidra. We'll put it that way. What do other people think?
I had a hard time picking, but I eventually settled on Owl. Because I would really like to have like a series of Janes running through my body right now. Like,
that's really terrifying. I'm not visualizing that. Oh, God.
Okay, Janes, go tackle the heart plaque now. Thanks. Please repair that.
Kevin, please, name of God, which character would you like to be?
Well, in one sense, being... like you said, being Sidra would be kind of cool, though. I think the closest analog would be the hacker guy who created the body kit for Sidra. At least that's who I pretend.
Oh, okay, so like the character that does not actually appear in the book?
Well, he's peripherally in the book. Doesn't have to be a main character, right?
Like, he sends email.
Only because he makes cool technology, and I'm like, well, that would be cool.
Okay. Who am I to argue?
But yes, if I had the choice, I would probably be like an immortal AI that lived in a body that could be renewed every 100 years. So that would probably be the one I would end up picking. But
yes. Well, I think if I had a choice of who I would want to be, maybe it would be Pepper, because despite having a terrible past, she seems to have made a really good adjustment and manages to get everything that she wants in the end. But if I look at who I actually am, it's definitely Sidra. Okay, let's see. Do we have anything else we want to discuss? All right.
Currently, Becky Chambers is on Twitter hiatus to write the next book in the series.
Excellent. Glad to hear it.
Good job, stalker.
All right. So until next time, we have been Sci-Fi.
Sci-Fi.
Sci-Fi.